Next, we address item E, AOC Restructuring, Judicial Council Liaison's Review of the Legal Services Office and Recommendation. Welcome, Justice Miller and Ms. Edith Mathai.
Thank you, Chief. At the February council meeting this year, the council directed the two liaisons for the LSO Services Office, myself and Edith Mathai, to take a look at Judicial Council Directive 122, which dealt with the cost-effectiveness of LSO's current use of outside counsel. And we started that process, and as a result, discovered that there were a number of other LSO-related restructuring directives, which we felt in our initial review of 122 that we ought to also incorporate into our review. So we broadened it and have now come before you with a report which deals with a number of aspects of LSO, and particularly those which are Judicial Council directives that we approved, I believe, last August. I want to thank Edith because she... Again, you know, I get paid for the time I spend. Edith doesn't get paid for the time she spends, and we spent a great deal of time on this. We met by telephone, we met in person, we met by video, we talked with AOC staff, with the three SEC members, we talked with... Edith talked with outside individuals and outside vendors. We talked with a whole bunch of people. We also included in this at the end for review Judge Kaufman and Judge Terry Jackson to review and provide us information. In the end, we also brought it back to the three SEC members who had some great suggestions, which we have incorporated into our report. So we're here before you. Edith Mathai is going to walk you through the analysis and our recommendations. I did want you to note on two pages, page 7 in the last paragraph where it refers to the chief counsel serves as legal counsel to the chief justice. We meant the chair of the judicial council, who is the chief justice, but the chief counsel does not serve as legal counsel to the chief justice, but she serves, or he or she serves in that capacity with whomever that may be in their capacity as chair of the judicial council. So in our final report, we will make sure that we change that. And it's also reflected again on page A1, which is attachment A in the description of the roles and duties of the chief counsel, where we again state the chief justice, and we'll make sure that we change that and it reflects its true meaning, which is the chair of the judicial council. So with that, Edith?
I'm going to start with the basic issue of the structuring, which in reviewing the SEC report, we came to the conclusion that perhaps the underlying issues which led to some of the concerns that were expressed in the SEC report could be addressed by altering the structure of and management of the office itself. And if you look on page 5 of your report, you'll see that under the top-level management, the office was structured in a number of subject matter units. They're not all labeled units, but it's fundamentally seven different units in subject matter categories. If you look on page 6, you have our recommendation for a restructure that is designed to group certain subjects together, but underneath each subject matter, the point is to recognize that the Legal Services Office has clients. And at the end of the day, the obligation of the office is to satisfy the clients that it serves. And those clients fall into two primary categories: the Judicial Council and the AOC as its staff, and I include within that all the advisory groups and all of the work that's done under the auspices of the Judicial Council. And then the other set of clients is the courts. And the thought was that if we structure an office that with a design that says there's a responsibility to those clients, that the accountability factor will go up. And the clients have a responsibility too, which is if the clients have concerns, it's the client's obligation to say to their lawyer, wait a minute, we think you need to be doing something differently. So the structure is set up with the chief counsel, obviously, on the top of your chart there, and then with three managing attorneys across, One, to handle judicial counsel services and legal opinions section of the LSO. One, transaction and business operations. And then one, litigation management, labor, and employment. Under each of those great larger categories, there would be a person designated for each of the client groups. So there would be a person who would be responsible for the judicial counsel side of that work, and there would be a person that would be responsible for the court side of that work. Your management is really, the top-level management is at those three managing attorneys, but the idea is to recognize that underneath that, we're going to have structures flowing down that serves the client groups. We eliminated, as the SEC report suggested, the associate chief counsel, I'm probably getting the title wrong, but whatever it is, the second guy in command or person in command, with the idea that one of the managing attorneys, most likely the judicial counsel services and legal opinions managing attorney, would step into that role in the absence of the chief counsel to serve that. We're also recommending that those lawyers who are actually performing legal services outside of LSO have a dotted line reporting into LSO because of the concern that we developed that if we have lawyers doing legal work outside of LSO, we have a risk of inconsistency, and we also have a risk of duplication of effort. One of our hopes is that this structure may also help avoid any duplication of effort. The idea is also to, as part of this structure, put formalized mechanisms in for client feedback so that when a project is completed, there will be solicitation of response from the client as to whether it was timely done. We also were asked to look at the question of having some lawyers in the regional offices. We concluded that as long as there was appropriate supervision and management to make sure that they are, in fact, doing what they are supposed to be doing, that it was appropriate to have lawyers in the regional offices, particularly to be able to go out to that trial court group of clients and provide more personal hands-on service. We also looked at the question of paralegals and felt that in light of the work that's done and in light of the other administrative support in the unit, that it didn't look as if paralegals would be a good option at this time. Finally, the question of outside counsel was looked at. We pretty rapidly concluded that there is a need to use outside counsel. It's not possible to have all of the specialties that we find ourselves doing legal services in represented within our own legal services office. There are too many esoteric specialties. And secondly, there's the whole litigation side of it, and we did not feel that it made sense to launch on trying to build an in-house counsel litigation department at this point. So once we concluded that there was a solid rationale for the use of outside counsel, we also concluded that doing a hindsight audit on past use was going to be tremendously burdensome, tremendously expensive, and would not serve the purpose that we're trying to accomplish here. The purpose that we're trying to accomplish is going forward, is there accountability in deciding when to use outside counsel? Is there accountability while they're being used as to whether they're being used properly and at an appropriate price? And then after the fact, an evaluation of whether the services that were provided were what we wanted and were what we paid for. So the concept is that those managing attorneys in the three areas would have the responsibility for documenting when we need to go to outside counsel and would have the responsibility for managing and supervising and reviewing the outside counsel selected to perform services in those three areas of legal services. There is also a requirement that there be annual reporting on the use of outside counsel, what they have been used for, and the expenditures that have been made for those counsels. Did I miss it?
Well, and with regards to that last one, we're going to recommend that be referred to A&E for their review and report so that they can also make that appropriate analysis of outside counsel and the money spent.
Right. And all of the recommendations that I have attempted to summarize as quickly as possible in light of the time are summarized at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 of your report.
We tried to not micromanage, in essence, the office. We kind of looked at it from a broad perspective and tried to make recommendations in that regards, knowing that there will be a new general counsel, and we wanted to leave the option for that new individual to look at the organization also and to try to fit within however their philosophy may be. But we kind of felt this provided an appropriate structure and a framework that we felt very comfortable with and that fit within the SEC recommendations and the directives that we adopted and what we thought was appropriate for the courts and the counsel.
And we noted that there has to be some flexibility in this because as anything new is tried, it needs to have the administrative director has to have the ability to have some flexibility to make this work in action as opposed to on a piece of paper.
Sue Alexander. Commissioner Alexander.
Thank you. I had a question about the attorney services outside of the LSO. It's on page 9. You differentiate between attorneys who provide legal advice that require a license to practice law and attorneys that would retain their requirement of having a law degree but not necessarily be licensed to practice law. How are you differentiating between those two?
Because of the fact, for instance, there are a number of licensed attorneys who are working in seizure and are working on educational materials and that sort of thing. And we weren't certain that those are people need to have a license to practice law or not, or whether having a legal degree is sufficient for that. And that's something we decided not to micromanage, but to simply say that once there's a determination made as to what the appropriate classification of these people are, if they are in fact practicing law that requires a law license, there should be a dotted line report into LSO so that LSO has the responsibility for all of those people who are actually practicing law within the administrative office of the courts.
And so how do you anticipate that being decided?
I think that's up to the LSO and the administration of the AOC to determine as we move forward in implementing this plan. We didn't want to get down into the analysis of job by job, you need a license for it. But there are issues such as whether there are bar dues issues, there are several other issues. And so the question is whether some of the people who are actually licensed are doing work that does require that continuing license. Mm-hmm.
Judge Wacob and then Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. First of all, I want to just thank Justice Miller and Edith Mathai. It's obvious that a lot of work and thought went into this, and thanks for reaching out and getting our comments. I'd like to just make maybe two or three quick bullet points on this. First, I don't disagree with the recommendations. There's a lot of ways to design that office, and obviously that office is under transition because of budget and retirements. At the time the SEC did the report, the office was much larger, and now we're down to, as of this week, I checked with Jody Patel, there's 29 attorneys in San Francisco, 6 in Burbank, and 2 in Sacramento. There's 8 attorneys that telecommute. My comment would be about the level of supervisors or management. At the time that we did the SEC report, we noted that there were, at that time, 9 management-level attorneys. There was general counsel, assistant general counsel, 3 managing attorneys, and 5 supervising attorneys. What is recommended now is, at least on page 5 of the report, a 10-member legal services office attorney management team. So what that results in is 10 attorneys out of 38 total attorneys in the office being in a management position. And that one of the comments that we had in the SEC report was it was top-heavy. There seemed to be too many high-level supervising or managing attorneys. So that's a comment. I'm not saying it's good or bad, just something to be noted. The other bullet point, I think, is on outside counsel. I mean, obviously, there is a need. It's completely and utterly appropriate to have outside counsel. There will always be special projects, litigation, and other matters for which outside counsel are going to be required. But this is not a small deal. I think we noted in the SEC report that in a 5-year period from 2006 to 2011, there was little over $29 million spent, about $6 million a year roughly, on outside counsel. So obviously there is a need for some type of monitoring of how that goes. And the focus of the SEC recommendations wasn't not to have outside counsel or not to use them or not to have anybody looking over a particular case, but it was to focus on a total cost-benefit analysis across the board. So what's being recommended here is that there be a managing attorney who is charged with responsibility for looking to see if outside counsel is being used appropriately. But that misses, in my view, an opportunity for an across-the-board ongoing monitoring of total outside counsel costs. In speaking with Justice Miller, I suggested that it really should fall on the judicial counsel in some way to be looking at these costs, that it's an important large amount of money that is spent, and that maybe some section of the Judicial Council Litigation Management Committee or some other group charged with it would periodically review these costs as they come along, as opposed to simply the single task of a managing attorney to watch a particular case. There's a big difference in the level of supervision about that. So I think I would not want to miss an opportunity for a little tighter oversight by the council as a whole on the total amount of outside counsel expenditures. The other thing that I think is implicit in this whole discussion, and the SEC did it, Justice Miller and Edith Mathai are doing it, we're sort of analyzing the office as if all of the services it provides will continue to be provided. And sort of implicit in the analysis is that all of the services that are provided are necessary, cost-beneficial services. And really, as so many areas and so many offices that we look at some point, I would suggest that there needs to be a reasoned, principled discussion about what are the core essential services that the office should provide. Is it necessary, for example, to staff 58 or so committees, task forces, and working groups? Is it good? Sure. Does it produce something? Yes. But is it cost beneficial in the long run? That's something that needs to be looked at. And I don't think that discussion has occurred. And that's something that I would like to see happen. You know, not just with respect to legal services, but other aspects of AOC divisions and offices. You know, what is the core service? What are we going to provide? And then we can answer the question about how to design the office and what it is they should be doing. But for what we're doing right now, I don't have any objections if that's the assumption that we're going on. So thank you.
So can I respond, or do you want to do the comments first?
Well, let's hear Judge Rosenberg, and then okay. If you might respond to both if necessary.
Well, I just had a very brief comment, but actually before I ask it, I would like Justice Miller or Edith Mathai to answer the question about top-heavy.
Sure.
If, in fact, there are 10 supervisors and managers in an office of 30 or 38, is that what's happening?
No. Okay. That was not the intent. And it's if you'll notice, first of all, ours the management structures that we're recommending is on page 6, not page 5.
Correct.
And it is anticipated that the chief counsel and the three managing attorneys are the top-level management of that office. You'll notice that in the designation of the sort of box level below that, we've put supervising attorney / senior attorney. Because we were uncomfortable with the label on the job description at this point in time. The idea is to have someone in that spot with those responsibilities. As far as the actual level, you know, they're going to be supervising things under their area, but the real management of the office is the four at the top with the others reporting to them, and we rather punted to the class and comp study in terms of what that next level down would be as far as title/pay, all of that stuff.
My only comment is, absent any revision of function, which I imagine will happen over time, I think this is an excellent presentation. I think you've suggested a structure that is both simple and functional, and I think we should give it a go. I certainly support it.
Is that a motion, Judge Rosenberg?
That's my motion, that we support, that we adopt the recommendation of the liaisons.
And to be clear, as you look at page 2, it's to encourage the administrative director to implement the following recommendations as described, and the recommendation is that the Judicial Council endorse the recommendations as described and direct him to report back on implementation by March 31st, 2014.
By golly, that was my motion.
And just to relieve any anxiety, if I could, if you look at page 11, the last bullet point just before LSO attorneys located in field offices, we're recommending that with regards to outside counsel, that that function with regards to oversight be assigned to the auditors from A&E, and then that they do report on it. We have an annual basis back to the Judicial Council, so there is that accountability and there is that review by the Judicial Council, and there is that ability for us to determine whether or not we feel like that money's being spent appropriately. So that is incorporated within there. And then lastly, there is an ongoing process right now at the AOC being administered by Judge Jarre and the three directors to look at exactly what Judge Walkup was concerned about, and that is they are going division by division to look at what their core functions are so that we as a council sometime later within this year can make a determination as to what those core functions are, what the necessities are, how they serve the trial courts, and how to prioritize it. So that is something that is ongoing right now, and if Jody was here, she could explain it far better than I could.
Judge McCabe, then Judge Kaufman.
Yes, Chief. First, I'll second the motion, and then next, I'd like to provide some additional illumination building on Judge Walkup's discussion and the SEC. Is the cost-benefit analysis was intended to be a factor, not the only factor. And in fact, we've run into that a number of times, and when we rolled this out last August, we got great resistance because of the word cost-benefit analysis, particularly when it dealt with issues like access to justice, et cetera. It's not the only factor, ever. It's a factor. And during the times, such as a fiscal crisis, maybe its weight is a little heavier than during flush times. But nonetheless, it was the SEC's opinion that such analysis was lacking in a number of decisions that were being made throughout the agency over the years. So we thought it prudent to insert that into the discussion. And that's what this is about, is discussion and, two, culture change. It's really what the report has done. It's got people talking and changing the way we do business, hopefully for the better, not intended to ever tear down, not intended. And it has had the effect of demoralizing the members of the AOC. There are countless outstanding members of the AOC that do invaluable service for the courts, and we recognize that. Unfortunately, we didn't highlight that because we didn't think that was our mission to pat people on the back, but rather point out the criticisms. But folks at AOC do a fantastic job, and daily I'm proud to associate with them and interact with them because they do a wonderful job. And so I'll throw that out there as a member of the SEC. Next is what I was hoping to see at some point, but recognizing, and I'm acquiescing with the motion, is that it really needs to be a fundamental analysis. Identify reoccurring and non-reoccurring services, subject areas. Of those areas, what are the costs associated with doing them in-house versus outside the house? And then you can actually put to it an economic analysis of what it's costing you and whether it makes sense to keep it going out or actually to retain somebody in. I agree with the concept that we have a, particularly because of the times, we have a new chief counsel coming in and presumably under a new structure within that office, which is considerably different. And what I would expect that collaborative unit to do is within the next year is to engage in that kind of analysis. And a year from now, what I would expect and would not be as quiet is I would be almost demanding, what kind of analysis have you done? I don't want to see a Ouija board and tell, you know, this is how you arrived at it. I want to see an analysis. And then I think under those that framework, which you're now putting in place, and coupled with a new person who's going to be at the head of that, let's see what they can do in the next year.
Ken, I hate to keep jumping in, but, you know, kind of that's my nature. If you look at the bullet points on page 11, I think it outlines exactly what was just indicated, that we want report back. We want this to be incorporated within LSO, and when we have the report back next March, these will be questions we can use as a template to ask them. A means for conducting an examination of the cost effectiveness of utilizing outside counsel versus potentially hiring attorney resources based on specific projects and the duration of legal assistance needed. A checklist that must be completed prior to initiating a contract with outside counsel to confirm there are no internal LSO resources available for the subject matter. And I don't want to go down each one, but I mean, if you read those, I think they respond to each of what those concerns were in the SEC report and our directives and what was just indicated. And this will be our template next year to hold their feet to the fire.
Judge Kaufman.
No. I was involved at the end with Judge Jackson, and I know that we had these type of discussions. I mean, this, and then Justice Miller reached out to the SEC members several times, and I was pleased with that. But I think what it demonstrates is a general change in philosophy. In other words, the SEC report came in, judicial counsel took it, they've assigned it, we're making changes, maybe not as fast as some people would like, but the changes are being made. And the thing is that I think it's critical is that we're coming back in March or whatever, and we're going to review it. So it's not like we have this report, we're saying changes the way we do business, and it just sits there forever. So you have an opportunity to make sure that it's working properly or to suggest, you know, enhancements or whatever. It's a new council. It's a new way of doing business, and I think it's impressive, and I think it's something we should be proud of. And instead of being, and some people take negative views, but really it's a very positive view in that we're making move in the right direction to fix, not that it was broken, but to make it better.
Exactly.
Justice Ashman.
I just have a question. What the recommendation is? Is it the items listed on pages 2 to 3, those 7, or is it the bullet points on page 11, or is it more general? I just wanted to be clear what the motion was.
Exactly, 2 to 3.
2 to 3, and then there's just an illustration on 6. So before we take the vote, I want to say that I really appreciate the hard work that went behind this. I knew there were many, many meetings, and I also want to echo what Justice Miller has said. Edith, this is all volunteer consulting on your part, and we are grateful for your expertise and your reaching out to others to bring the expertise to this. And it's clear that we're in a better position for it, and I thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Are there any tickets left for last night?
I'm not telling.
Judge Jarr.
I, too, wanted to thank both liaisons. As I indicated to the members of the Executive and Planning Committee when the matter came on for assurance of readiness for presentation to you, I thank them because this was an unanticipated additional component in my responsibility to you to discharge the directives which you placed on me and on the office last August following the SEC process. I had not anticipated that we would have this circle in which council members would detach themselves, in effect, from the council and conduct an independent examination, not just of one, as you began to do under direction of the council, but a series of issues pertaining to LSO, which implicate several of the directives of the council. When I saw how this was blossoming, I guess that's a fair term, I made a point of standing back for the sake of ensuring that I could remain an observer, and I committed to myself to do that through this discussion today, because any and all comments that have been made inform the recommendations that, in effect, you folks are making to me, in response to which I will be reporting to you in discharge of those directives. This was a very helpful process. It has allowed the engagement of the council members in details pertaining to one of our offices. And as I indicated to the Executive and Planning Committee, there may be other circumstances in which a similar exercise I might find very helpful in other particulars, and I might be passing on an invitation, but not to Ms. Mathai and Justice Miller. But thank you very much indeed. This has been very helpful to me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Without not seeing any more hands raised for discussion, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Matter carries. Thank you.